The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Jesus and his disciples left for the villages round Caesarea Philippi. On the way, he put this question to his disciples: Who do people say I am? And they told him, John the Baptist. They said, others, Elijah. Others again, one of the prophets. But you, he asked, who do you say I am? Peter spoke up and said to him, you are the Christ. And he gave them strict orders not to tell anyone about him. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man was destined to suffer grievously, to be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and to be put to death, and after 3 days to rise again. And he said all this quite openly. Then, taking him aside, Peter started to remonstrate with him. But turning and seeing his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said to him, get behind me, Satan, because the way you think is not God's way, but man's. He called the people and his disciples to him and said, if anyone wants to be a follower of mine, let him renounce himself and take up his cross and follow me. For anyone who wants to save his life will lose it, but anyone who loses his life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. The Gospel of the Lord. Peter spoke up and said to him, you are the Christ. What's in a name? When it comes to names, each culture has its own tradition when naming people, and there can be a mixture of tribal, family, and individual meanings attached, many of which may be lost with the passage of time. For example, the surname Carpenter tells us what a particular family's trade may have been in the past, but it would be pure chance if a carpenter was still working with wood today. The same could be said of Smith. Smith is a very common surname. It's unlikely, though, that many Smiths would be blacksmiths. In the Christian tradition, first names have usually been taken from those of the saints or from the Bible. But of course, in our own day, we often find that baptismal names no longer come from the Christian tradition, more likely to be a pop singer's name or a footballer's name. I baptized a child recently, Xander, which was an interesting one. We may have strong feelings for or against our own name, but it carries power for us. Sometimes when you have these group meetings, the clergy do this sometimes, you have an icebreaker activity which is going round the group and everybody says their name. As well as being a useful tool to fit faces and names together, of course, when we do that, the layers of history, meaning, and feelings revealed can be quite fascinating. Names in the Bible are always significant because they tell us a lot about the role the person is asked to play in the unfolding plan of salvation. Remember the importance given to the naming of Jesus and of St. John the Baptist in St. Luke's Gospel, for example. And in the Old Testament, one of the pivotal moments is when Moses at the burning bush asks God for his name. And God appears to evade the question. You see, to know someone's name is to have a degree of power over that person, and no one can have power over God. So in the Jewish tradition, even God's elusive reply to Moses, usually translated as I am, or I am who I am, is never spoken aloud. Yet, in our gospel reading this evening, Jesus asks his disciples about his own identity. To begin with, he asks who the people say he is, and the replies are those of important characters from the past who heralded momentous shifts in the history of salvation. But then Jesus goes directly to his disciples. A much more direct question, which reminds us of God's elusive self-disclosure to Moses. But who do you say I am? Peter answers accurately, you are the Christ, the Messiah. Jesus is recognized and he is named for who he is. And so this little episode becomes an important turning point in his mission, providing as it does a crucial change in our understanding of the nature of God, even though for the moment at least, Jesus instructs his disciples to tell no one about him. So here we have God himself no longer keeping himself apart, jealously guarding his own identity, but revealing himself as one like ourselves, subject even to human power. He allows himself to go on to be crucified. And of course, he tells us that in order to follow him, we too have to take up the cross, as we heard later in that reading. Whatever our role in life, whatever our position in the church, our starting point is the same as that of Peter and the disciples. We too, each of us, have to answer the very question Jesus put to them. Who do we say Jesus is? Can we answer? Can we answer from the heart? We need to answer. And we need to do so not just with the mind, but with the heart. We need to be ever aware of God constantly revealing himself and emptying himself for us in and through his Son. If we have the faith to do that, we in turn receive our names. We are allowed to turn the question around and ask Jesus what name he gives us. Who does he say we are? We are all his followers, but the good of the church and the growth of the kingdom require that we have a clear idea of what our individual contribution may be. We have to be, using the title of a book that I believe you're going to be familiar with, intentional disciples. We need to be intentional disciples. It's not only the clergy, you see, and the members of religious orders who are called and named in this way. Every single baptized Christian is called by God. Every baptized Christian has a vocation, and a crucial vocation. Every single one of us. And it is through daily prayer and reflection, with the help of those who know us well, to discern how we are to live out that calling in our everyday lives. Each of us has a unique contribution to make, and each of our names is known to God. Our faith is a personal faith. It is up to us to live out that name to its fullest in the service of the kingdom. Even though that does bring with it a cost. Because, as Jesus said, if anyone wants to be a follower of mine, let him renounce himself and take up his cross and follow me.